We're going to go back to Psalm chapter 37. Some people, the Lord just gives, what do they call that? Future vision to. Yeah. Back in Psalm 37 this morning, who remembers what we talked about last week out of Psalm 37?
The talks,
the mouth of the righteous.
That's right.
And I have not much left that thought this week, because it just seems like it's a subject that grows the more you water it, and gets watered pretty heavily throughout the week. So last week we covered the mouth of the righteous and the concept of our talking. And that command is very important in everything we do in life, and we covered a lot of that last week. But the following verses seem like it gives more reason to watch your talk. And so we're not going to recover that subject again, but we are going to go through a few things concerning verses 32 and 33, and I'd like to also cover 34 as well, but we'll get there. I was telling her this morning as I was typing it up that I'm three paragraphs in and I haven't even gotten to the text that I planned on being on this week. So we're just going to see what we can get. It all goes together really well. The Bible correlates everything, obviously, by divine design, to where it goes together so perfectly that when you're trying to teach it, it gets really hard to put it all together in a way that it's understandable within a time frame. It's just like when you watch one of those documentaries. It's the same thing teaching the Bible. So pay attention, and we're going to try and get through this morning. So in Psalm chapter 37, we're going to start in verses 32 and 33. It's going to say, "The wicked watcheth the righteous, and seeketh to slay him. The Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged." So a good principle to keep a hold of, and I've said it up here before, is that the wicked will always be watching you and to do nothing but to simply look for you to fall. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about it last week. Co-workers especially see what you say all the time, hear what you say, and see what you say all the time. And for that reason, it's a good way to watch your talk. But maybe these people at work that watch you talk, maybe you hang out with them. Maybe you do this. Maybe you do that. Maybe they're a good friend, quote unquote. But if you were to fall with these people that watch you, I guarantee you that they do nothing but watch you fall, and they will remember nothing that you. They'll remember everything that you said, but remember more what you did. You see, they listen to your talking to see if your walk is going to walk that way as well. Last week we covered the importance of your words, your conversation, what you say, how you say it, how you think about what you say, which obviously I have to work on quite a bit. But how does that affect this right here? Why does he follow it up immediately with "the wicked watcheth the righteous"? He's talking about them listening to you in the previous one. It says in verse 31, "The law of God is in his heart, none of his steps shall slide." That's a really good verse to hang on to, because then you know where to get your talk and how to perceive and think and just use your words accordingly. But he follows that up immediately with "the wicked watcheth the righteous." Why would you reckon he would follow that up immediately with that? Particularly with us living in the world, we all know that we are a minority. We are a fierce minority. Unless you just go with a blanket term Christian. We all know that how we stand, how we walk, how we study, how we believe that Christ should be followed is generally a minority. And you are held to higher scrutiny. Particularly if the law of God is governing your life and your words, you are held to a higher standard. Whether you like it or not, this happens in the heart of men. So, when you are dealing with the unsaved world and your words reflect the law of God, they watch you closer. They watch you closer. They watch your wife closer, your husband accordingly. They watch your kids closer. All in all, the wicked watcheth the righteous and seek to slay you. They don't watch you to say, "That's who I aspire to be right there. They are such a good person. They always say such nice things with their words. I don't have anything against them except that they think they're better than me." except that they think they speak higher of me, or because they don't watch this or listen to that, that they're better than me. Because I can guarantee you this, they have nothing but bitterness and angst towards what's in your heart. And what you say, because the wicked hate God, will always try and find a reason why God isn't everything you've said that He is. Because you reflect a higher standard of righteousness. Or you should, and if you don't, seriously consider your ways. They watch you not to aspire to be you, but to find a reason to hate God more. Because if you love God and act that way and speak that way, then they that say they love God and speak and act another way are automatically condemned by their own actions. Just like it says in the Bible, where their heart condemns them already. You don't have to do anything except for do right. But what they will do is watch you and seek to cut you down. Because this is the way of the wicked. We spoke about that a couple months ago, the way of the wicked. The company you keep is more important now than ever before, and for that reason alone. It'll go one of two ways. The mouth of the righteous will correct and uplift you in their correction. However, the wicked will say, just like in the Bible, aha, and continue to cut you down. He brings out, he goes from speaking to watching, because just like they say, it says put your money where your mouth is. That's a lot more realistic term than most people think, because that's how everybody will think. You talk that way, now let's see you act that way when I do this. And this goes into every aspect of your life. Ways the wicked watch you is not always afar off. People tend not to like to look at you from here to there. They don't like to watch you from your desk. They don't like to watch you in secret. The wicked watching you and seeking to slay you is not always so pernicious as you may think, where they are far off plotting and planning against you. This goes right into, especially in the workplace, they like to form a lasting bond with you because they like to keep their friends close and their enemies closer. Anyone who can seek to be better than them or can do better than them, they tend to buddy up with really quick because they see something that maybe they could piggyback off of. But really, what they're looking for is something for you to do wrong to make them look better. This is the way that the world operates. So now, put that personally. Wyatt, you're 16 today. You go out and you get a job. You do any sort of good job out there, any sort of good work, even if it's just checking at Walmart, left to right to left, whatever. If you do that better than anybody else, you're going to make a lot of friends, quote unquote. Because then they can see where you fall short. They can work closer with you. They can help you, they'll say. And this is anywhere you go. This is if you're stirring fertilizer. This is if you're throwing up buildings. This is anything. If you do it very well and do what you're told and respect people, there are people who want to be your friend. But not for the right reasons. Way too often, these friends creep into our lives and take a special place in our heart. Way too often, you allow these people to speak in your ear, come to your house, speak to your children, influence you in the wrong way. And I'm here to tell you that that is really how the wicked seek to slay you. Why do you have those friends in the first place? What really push to be your friends, so you kind of let them in a little bit because we're supposed to be friendly. A man who wishes to have friends must show himself friendly, correct? Mm-hmm. But there ought to be some standards and guards there as well. Yeah. They attach themselves to you for a couple reasons, and that's to find faults easier or to take advantage of your generosity or a combination thereof. Because you do operate the way the Lord has, and so you are a little more generous. Let me pay for your lunch. Let me buy your gas. Let me do this. Let me do that. Oh, no, you really can't. Okay. Let me get it this one time. Okay, that's fine. They usually give in pretty easy. I'm not a confrontational person. If he offers to pay for my food, I don't fight back that hard. But there's a difference there that if, you know how people sometimes get used to that and they like take advantage, they just know that if you go somewhere that you are going to pay for their food. And that you are going to pay for gas. That they are going to take your vehicle. And when gas is $4 a gallon, it's super nice. They're not going to discuss, you brought it up the other day, we could split gas. And that's fine. But how many people are actually going to do that? Why are these people your friends? Really examine this. Because I am not against friends. Everyone will think I will by the end of this. But I am not against having friends. But I am against having the wrong kind of friends that do the wrong things for your life. This is not going to be a lesson about how toxic people should not be your friends. That is not what you're going to take away here. But what you will take away here is that a lot of us are really stupid in our doctrine on how we make friends. And especially Psalms and Proverbs tells us a lot about making, keeping, or having friends. And let me just start the message off by saying this, that friends to most people are just people you come into contact with. There was one person in particular that when I just out and said it, said, I really just don't have friends at work. It's a bad deal. They said, I thought we were really good friends. And then that really just made gears turn in my head later, because everyone knows that it comes in, but I think about it way later, and sometimes that's for my detriment. But I thought about it, and I said to myself on the way home, I said, you know what? That person was right. They probably did think we were really great friends because they told me everything about their personal life. And I said nothing about mine. But then that made my gears turn more, and I said, well, that's what most people, that's what friends are to most people. Something they can just dump off their entire personal life. Dump it off. Well, what do you think I should do? Well, what do you think this, what do you, in this situation, what do you think here? And they care nothing about what's going on in your life. They don't care if you're having money troubles. They don't care if your car broke down. They don't care if your mom just died or just whatever. They don't care. As long as you listen to them. That's a good friend. Because they don't have to worry a thing about you. But you're taking in every bit about them. Further thinking, I was just sitting there. I'd sit there and do my work, and this person would just dump off on me. And I'd just be sitting there working on it. So I didn't really realize it till later. But that's the way it went. So why are these people there? Why do you entertain these relationships in your life, particularly when you're sure they are unsaved people, just there for your company, I guess. Most times these friendships are formed because of loneliness or because we spend so much time at work we feel obligated to have a wonderful relationship with everyone because we are there 40 plus hours a week. That being said, we are there 40 plus hours a week. And we should be friendly to everybody at work. But you cannot be friends with everybody at work. I submit to you this is not the case, because let's look at this. Jesus was around sinners. There wasn't a local church when Jesus was around. He was around sinners all the time. But what did he talk about? What did he broadcast? What did he do? Where did he go? He didn't continually go out to dinner with them, even though he did feed them quite a few times. Exactly. But he didn't cut up about sports. He didn't delve into the drama that is their own personal lives. He didn't talk about the local news. He didn't just go out. He didn't talk about all that. Everything that was talked about around him, even the questions that seemingly had nothing to do with Jesus, he completely turned around back into, well, let's talk about this. Let's go back to this. Let's do that. His conversation, the mouth of the righteous, spoke nothing but wisdom. Something we often lose about Jesus is that he lived the principle of the Bible, but he was human. And that while I'm not for the over-humanization where we just absolutely like give Jesus an attitude, I was in a sermon once where they really gave Jesus an attitude toward these people. He didn't have that attitude because his mouth spoke nothing but wisdom, which is not spoken in haste or in angst. He always kept his attitude and his mind and his heart centered on his Father's work, which is where all things should come from, which is where wisdom come from. He was around sinners a lot, but failed to form long-lasting, deep, tell everyone your sorrows, friendships with everybody. Was it because he didn't care? Was it because these were filthy people and that we just shouldn't? This is terrible. They're stupid people. We can't do that. They can't grasp what I'm talking about. How many times did Jesus say, I know you guys won't understand this, but here it is. But if you have ears to hear, think about this. You guys don't know what I'm saying right now. And that sounds really arrogant to say, I don't recommend saying that. But here it is. He put it out there. Not just useless words, but he put it out there, the wisdom of Christ, even for the world to hear. He was about his Father's business and not making friends. I would like to point out that this is only the case if you're doing right. There's a particular person that comes to mind where this person who claims to be a Christian tends to hang out with this other person who does not claim that, but is a very sophisticated person, good speech, very organized, doesn't cuss that often, so that makes him a pretty decent person, right? And during the best of times, they are besties for the resties. I mean, they're stuck together. They help each other with everything, and so on and so forth. You get the picture. Well, this prim and proper person, who this, I'll call him a Christian claimer, hangs around with, more than often than not, as soon as this Christian claimer does something wrong, this prim and proper person does nothing but tell everybody that this person knows this Christian, what this person did, without ever mentioning it to this person. I'll hear it around the horn before anyone else does. And I'll go to this person and I'll say, did this happen? And it will have happened, but not in the way that it was being broadcasted, of course. So, that is to further this point, that this friendship was formed out of what? Really nothing. Because this friend is a really good friend until this other person slips just a little. And then everybody knows how bad this was, and it turned from a slip to a rock slide. And it ruins testimonies. But think about this. When that does happen, and your reputation is on the line, and it is going everywhere, and you have no idea about it, but now everyone thinks this about you, how can you comfort yourself in the Bible when the Bible says this right here? Knowing that you have completely thrown out the principles of the Bible in your selection of friends, and you expect it to work out great. You expect it to work out just perfectly. But then it says, the wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him. And you read that and you're like, boy, that just happened. Is that comforting to you? When it's happened to you and you knew that this is, and you just threw it out as, I'm witnessing to this person, or I'm doing good for this person, or I'm showing this person the Bible through me by doing all this stuff with them. Is that the way this should go? It's pretty hard to comfort yourself in the Lord when you've abandoned all precepts for the sake of friends and now experienced what the Bible says is going to happen every time. So you may ask me, is it wrong to have friends? No. But I also say from the Bible that friends are a tricky thing to have when you define it wrong. Part of the problem we have today is we preach the Bible in church, but we don't preach how friendship should really go. There's a lot to be said for, and this may sound a little cultish, but there's a lot to be said for the bounds of the church and the tie that binds the church together. Because I can be friends better with these people out there than I can be with them in the church. And if that is, that's a red flag for your own heart. Why is it that you feel like you can be friends with these people out here because they don't know what I hear in church? Where are the bounds of friendship for you guys? Where have you set that for yourself? Where? Think about it within yourself. You come to church 3 times a week. You're at work 5-6 times a week sometimes. Where are the bounds of friendship there? Do you bind it with people who know and agree and walk together in faith with you so that when you do slip, it's not broadcasted to the world, but correction and edification is given in the Word instead? Because that's what a righteous friend will do. He won't run back to the preacher, except for that one guy in church that I was with. He would always tell the preacher because it was the preacher's job to straighten him out. That's not the way this is. There are plenty of verses in the Bible about good friends speaking wisdom and instruction when it's unclear to you. When all the younger people in here go out and do whatever they're going to do, leave the home, who are you going to surround yourself with? I know this one person in particular. They got out of the house. They moved like 30 miles away from where they used to live. And they decided that, and they would still go to the same church because it was like right in the middle. But they decided that they needed their own set of friends. This has a lot to do because of the culture we live in that segregates friends into little cliques. And if you're not part of that clique, then you can't be part of our club. A lot of these are set up on worldly parameters such as how you dress, how you would like to dress, what you're into, whether it be sports, a fandom, which is totally, totally out of bounds, or a following of a certain music or band. Or a fandom, for all who are here, is a certain TV show to which they put you in a basket. And this TV show usually has multiple seasons, multiple characters. And if you like this TV show too, you can be part, or a movie series, it can be a fandom to which you live in this kingdom of fans and you're obsessed over it. You know all the intricacies. If there's some sort of weird language, you know that. I mean, it's one thing, Zach, it's deep and it's terrible. It's like religion for movies. And anybody who thinks that that's what goes into, you're completely wrong. But that's how they click it out. That's how our culture clicks this out. If you like this movie, you can be over here. If you like this TV show, you move over here. If you like this genre, you can be over here. And you go to different events. You talk about it. You go on Facebook groups. I mean, you are in, buddy. The only thing you're not in is a good Bible-believing church. And so that's how we separate things out. So why do you reckon that we're in such a big mess with friends? Not to be obvious here, but the wicked do not make good friends.
No.
Not even to other wicked people. But the answer to your question lies in the following verses, which is verse 34, where it says, "Wait on the Lord and keep His way, and He shall exalt thee to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it." Like we said at the beginning, most times these friendships are gathered simply because of impatience, of doing things your own way, of refusing to delve deeper into the faith. this social religion, that this construct that we've come up with in America, where you can, just like when you used to go out and beat doors for the gospel, that's really where it started coming down. Because you went out, and the whole thing about door-to-door, when I was growing up, may have been different because it's changed a lot. The concept was to get the community involved. It wasn't about winning souls so much as it was getting community involved in the church. And so when you went out and knocked the doors towards the end of it, it was less about asking them if they would go to heaven, but more about asking them if they would come to church. Just get them in the door. Just get them to sit down and listen. Invite them to church. Get them to church. Say, if they're offended by that question, just get them in the church. I say, yeah, because that's going to work. What do you preach in church? And so the concept that you have of friends is now completely marred, where you have to have friends or you're nothing in society. There are memes out there and everything people like to post about being the lone wolf, about being a loon in society, about how I'm different and I'm okay with that. But you're really not. That's why you're on Facebook broadcasting it. You're looking to see who likes it so you can go make friends with them too. So furthermore, the concept of friends that we've gotten from the social construct has completely ruined us. Because just like I said at the beginning, where we're at work with them 40 hours a week, so obviously you might as well be friends with them so you can have fun at work. Because you can't have fun at work. I'm not supposed to have fun at work, but if you're going to, you got to have fun at work and have all this group of people so you can hype up and have a great day. Just like these TV sitcoms where they go to work and they have fun all day, and this is not. That, obviously that's a sitcom, not reality, so why do we even compare? It's because we lack patience. Because we think we need friends. And so we expedite that process. How many friends do you need to study the Bible effectively? Actually, the less the better. Zero is particularly better. It says, wait on the Lord and keep His way. How are you supposed to keep His way if you never know His way? I mean, we're throwing all the way back to verse 31 where it says the law of God is in His heart. Don't take this the wrong way, but if you do, whatever. But friends generally hinder your growth in Christ. Friends generally prevent you from having time to look for God. To know God. When Paul was in prison, he had a lot of brethren, but he had very few friends. And so he had plenty of time to commune with the one that he actually cared about. We care too much about having friends than we do about having God. And that's the majority of our problem. You will change anything to have a friend. But how much will you change to have God? A lot of people read this verse and say, why do we want land and no friends? You've got to understand the context of this verse. This land is what God has given to His people. It's what God promised to His people. In essence, it's having what God has promised you. God never promised us that we would have a million friends. But I tell you what God has guaranteed, and that's if you surround yourself by wicked people and wicked friends, it never ends well.
Nope, that's right.
Why do you choose to surround yourself with counsel of wicked friends? Mm-hmm. There's one thing I can also guarantee you is that they'll never keep their opinion to themselves.
Nope.
And just like I was talking about last week, that opinion is in you. When you hear it, it's in you. You may reason it away forevermore, but when the time comes, it will still be in your heart for consideration. And if you don't protect yourself from that, it will produce ruin. The only friend you will ever need is the one who has decided that they need no friend except Jesus. And that friend ought to be Jesus for yourself.
Yeah. Yep.
if you can't talk about scriptural things legitimately and legibly, that would be a red flag to me as to not be friends with that person. You want to focus your heart not on finding friends you can join a Bible group with, but rather just join the Bible and being friends with Jesus. This sounds pretty terribly base in the teaching, but the wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him. But it says in verse 33, the Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged. To which he follows immediately up with and says, wait on the Lord and keep his way. You are to expect nothing from anybody, but to expect everything from the Lord. Because he's the only one who will follow through on what he has said. You will get involved with wicked people at work because you have to work with them. And when they get their feelings hurt because you said that you're not friends with anybody at work, that hurts their feelings. But it's the truth. You are to be friendly, but you are to wait on the Lord. When you need a friend, God will send you a friend. But you don't ever really need a friend. What you need is to quit moaning and groaning and be friends with God. Understand His ways. Keep His ways. Know what's going on with this. All through this chapter, I believe David is trying to put out there that nothing matters outside walking with God and trusting Him and Him alone. He's wrapping it up here at the end of this chapter. And he keeps reminding people that, hey, I've seen the wicked blown up. I've seen the wicked in power. I've seen it where they're out of control. But there's two things you can count on. And one is that the wicked will burn you. And two, that the wicked will burn. If you have a friend whose drama is constant and the only topic they want to discuss, you ought to elevate the conversation above that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, just like that person at work that would just dump off their personal life and I would kind of just ignore them and keep working. That was kind of wrong of me. You ought to elevate that conversation. Mm-hmm. Because God has given us wisdom in our hearts through His Word, not your own words. It was always said, whenever the righteous went in front of an unrighteous judge, king, person, whatever, it was always said, don't practice what you say. Say what I give you. And the same is true through us today. Don't say what you practice. Say what is given to you. Which is only when you keep the law of God in your heart. Bring it up higher than someone's selfish misgivings. Because the mouth of the righteous speaketh gossip, slanders, rehashes drama? No. The mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom. You are put at work, put amongst people, not to befriend them and to lead them to Christ, but to show them Christ through your words, actions, and deeds. If you are not speaking wisdom among those you count as friends, then are they the friends that you need? Why do we choose to waste our testimony by using our mouth for the same things that wicked sinners do? Just like right now with all the news and the terror and the stocking up and frenzy that we're in right now, are you waiting on the Lord there either? Because there are a lot of people at work that will speak to you. Well, I guess you know we're going to be nuked. Or I guess you know we're going to be blown up. Well, let me tell you what I hear a lot of. And this is from people that you absolutely know are sinners. There is no doubt about it. Their fruit is rotten. And they'll say, but the Bible says it's going to happen. You know. And they look right at you. And they tell you of the prophecy of the world coming to an end. And that God knows it, man. God knows it, man. And the only thing that I can think to say to them, and this is kind of offensive to them, but I say it anyway, I say, but do you know God? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, man, I've been saved, I've been baptized. I guess you don't think so because of the way I talk and everything. I mean, what do you say to all that? All they're doing is comforting themselves. But what you shouldn't do He's let them get away with it. They need to know God.
Yes.
They need it as you needed it when you were a sinner. Are you going to waste your testimony, waste your words when the opportunity arises? When they say stuff like that, it's really tempting for me to just not say anything to them. Because really, generally, they're just trying to get you riled up and to say, they want you to tell them that they know nothing about it. One person in particular a few days ago said that I read the ESV because, I just can't read the King James Version. I just can't read the King James Version. She kept saying that repeatedly. I just can't read the King James Version. And I said, someone told you that lie a long time ago. And I said, if you can read words, you can read God's Word. And there wasn't another word spoken after that. And it was kind of awkward. But I sat there and I thought to myself, that needed to be said.
Yes.
Somebody told her a lie. Somebody ought to tell her the truth.
Yes.
They've lied to him for so long, and we have remained silent for so long in the name of getting along with people, that our kids can't even get along with God. That's not how we're going to do this. Especially what's coming. That's not the way we're going to do this. You ought not to be obnoxious. You ought not to be a beat them till they believe kind of Christian. But if there is an opportunity to say something, you ought to say something. It doesn't take many words because they usually won't carry on the conversation. But God ought to be stood up for. Because they do seek to slay you. So getting along with them is obviously not an option anyway. Look at your friends. Do you feel threatened by them that if you were to say something, you may lose them forever? I can tell you this, that you lose them forever anyway. The kind of friends you surround yourself with show either the patience or impatience of your own heart. Because none sticketh closer than a brother. Than the one we ought to be following, the one we ought to be studying, and the one we ought to be absolutely in line with. Everything's coming down, everything's coming to a close. So are we waiting on opportunities? Are we waiting on friends? Or are we waiting on the Lord, as he said we ought to here? Because if we're not, then we are totally out of line. You ought to follow guidance from the Lord by actively waiting and studying and reading. Not seeking friendships to convert them, but rather just showing Christ with your words and your deeds and your actions. A patient mouth generally speaks wisdom faster than what they call a spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting on the Lord will... I mean, it all goes together. Speaking wisdom, waiting on the Lord, keeping His way. It's not a 10-step program that they're putting here. But the friends we keep generally affect our heart more than anything. We can't be friends with everything. I mean, you got so many segregations of Christianity that you can't be friends with Christians out in the world. Because if they go to a different, we can be friends, we're Christians, but we go to a different church. A lot of times you can still be good brethren with those people, but they just want to be friends. Buddies, punch you in the arm, say hi, high five you, that kind of friend. But those people can also poison your heart. They can poison your soul. What they give to you is not good communication. Because how do you know that somebody else is in the faith? The Spirit will bear witness with you. If you let their spirit in, with a few exceptions, we let them in because they're good people. Or, they may use a different version, but they're good people. They may go to a different church, but they're good people. If their spirit is not bearing witness with yours, you cannot let that stand. You can't. Wait on the Lord, keep His way, and keep watch over your own soul.
Amen.